One of the most distinctive R&B voices of the 1970s has died. Teddy Pendergrass gained international attention as the lead singer for Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. He went on to a wildly successful solo career that ended abruptly when an auto accident left him partially paralyzed. NPR's Allison Keyes has this remembrance.
The first thing that struck you about Teddy Pendergrass was the voice. It was raw and gravelly, but not in a way that would hurt. In a way you wanted to touch, especially if you were one of the legions of screaming female fans that flocked to his shows. Turn off the lights, light a candle. Women famously threw, well, undergarments on the stage when Pendergrass sang, mesmerized by a voice that somehow seemed more manly, more virile, than other soul singers like Marvin Gaye, whose vocals were more vulnerable and safer. In 1983, even comedian Eddie Murphy had to recognize the power of Pendergrass.
I like dudes with masculine voices, man, like a Teddy Pendergrass. Teddy just come out, take the lyrics, and go, you got what I need. Throw your panties on the stage.
Pendergrass discovered early that he wanted to be a performer. Born Theodore DeReese Pendergrass Jr. in 1950, he was raised in Philadelphia. He sang in church as a child and thought he wanted to preach. But when he was a teenager, he saw Jackie Wilson perform.
And he just controlled the stage. His audience was in the palm of his hands.
Pendergrass told WHYY's Fresh Air in 1998 the show changed his life, particularly the reaction of women who ran to the front when Wilson intentionally rolled off the stage.
To see the ladies run through the guardrails and just lay on top of him and appear to make mad passionate love to him in the middle of the floor at whatever time it was that morning, my jaws dropped. It was like, my God.
Pendergrass dropped out of high school, got a gig as a drummer with the Cadillacs, and in the early 70s ended up as lead singer with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
All the things that we've been through, you should understand me like I understand you.
Producers Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff, architects of the 1970 style that became known as the Sound of Philadelphia, told WHYY's Fresh Air that Melvin was miffed that Pendergrass was getting all the attention.
He used to come to me and say, man, they think that Teddy's Harold Melvin. I said, well, you know, don't worry about it.
That was that power.
That power led Pendergrass to a solo career.
Looking back over my years, I guess I shed some tears. I told myself time and time again, this time I'm gonna win.
His million-selling albums produced a string of hits, from Close the Door to the smash anthem Turn Off the Lights to 1980's Love TKO.
Looks like another Love TKO.
Then, in 1982, Teddy Pendergrass was partially paralyzed in an automobile accident. He continued to sing from a wheelchair, but it was 19 years before he gave another full concert. It was difficult for the singer to project his voice the way he once had. But Pendergrass said a lot more changed after the accident.
I know I see life much different because I'm experiencing life much, much differently. But I feel good about me because I'm not going to let this keep me from being the person I know I can be.
Teddy Pendergrass set up a foundation to help others with spinal cord injuries. He died yesterday in suburban Philadelphia, 8 months after surgery for colon cancer. He was 59 years old. Allison Keyes, NPR News.
And I want to thank you for giving me the privilege just to live so that I can give all.
Wake up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy.
Hey, what up, girl?
Grab my glasses, I'm out the door. I'm gonna hit this city.
Let's
before
go.
I leave, brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack. Cause when I leave for the night, I ain't coming back.
The pop world has a new sensation.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ. Blow my speakers up tonight. I'ma fight till we see the sunlight. Tick tock on the clock, but the party don't stop. No.
That's Kesha with her hit song Tick Tock. Rolling Stone has called her music repulsive, obnoxious, and ridiculously catchy.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Whatever it is, it's number one on the charts. Kesha has replaced Susan Boyle. TikTok is taken from her debut album, Animal. It sold over 150,000 copies.
She's been called the first breakout star of 2010. Kesha Siebert joins us from her studios in New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
First, how do you like a description like Rolling Stones? Let me read again. Repulsive, obnoxious, and ridiculously catchy.
I think it's funny. I think that I have then captured myself pretty accurately because I can be obnoxious. I don't think I'm necessarily repulsive, except for if I haven't showered in a few days. But ridiculously catchy? I'm way into that part.
Well, I can't tell that you haven't showered in a few days, so... You kind of grew up in the music business, the creative part, if you please, the behind the sheet of music part.
Yeah.
As opposed to the performing part. What led you to the stage, finally?
One of my first memories was I was kind of like looking up at my mom as she was performing.
This is P.B. Siebert,
uh-huh,
your mother, who wrote Old Flames Can't Hold Candle to you.
Yeah, that was recorded by, I don't know if you know this, you probably do, but Johnny Cash and Dolly Parton and Merle Haggard. So
yeah.
She's just an incredible writer,
mm-hmm,
in person. And when I would go to high school, I'd come home and for fun we would write songs together. Mm-hmm. So
this is in Nashville?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I always knew it was what I wanted to do. I've never really thought about having a... I'm sorry.
Is that your cell phone?
I turned it off. Let me turn it off.
How funny. There you are, a now famous musician. That's your ringtone?
Yeah. I am such a space
cadet. I mean, people are probably downloading some of your songs as their ringtone, and you've got that little, you know, otherworldly Martian bleep.
I want to get a beeper. I'm sick of this technology.
I don't know if you can get
them
anymore.
It's confusing. No, yeah. I want to look into it because then nobody can bother me. They can just page me,
yeah.
Call them back. But anyways, I'm sorry about that. No, but what I was just saying is music, I've never really believed in having a fallback plan. So it just kind of, I always knew this is what I was going to do.
Tell us about the song Stephen that was co-written by your mother.
I love that song.
Well, why don't we listen to a little of it?
All right, deal.
Stephen, why won't you call me? Stephen, why won't you call me?
I saw you in your tight-ass rocker pants. You saw me too. I laughed because it was completely trashed. And I watched your ugly girlfriend sneer across the room as if I really care that she's here with you.
This song winds up being unexpectedly touching. I'll tell our audience, okay, who are obviously going to notice a couple of other properties before they take my word that it's touching, but it is.
Well, the song is really vulnerable. It's about a guy that I was completely obsessed with, and he would just not give me the time of day and being so frustrated over it. The chorus is, Stephen, why won't you call me? Mm-hmm. I can't take rejection. Why won't you call me?
Stephen.
Is his name actually Stephen?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my word.
I really think it's the best revenge.
Boy, best-selling album. So we can hope that Stephen is like stacking the toilet tissue at Walmart now, right?
Well, I mean, he's such
Which
a loser.
Which is an honest job, don't get me wrong, and respectable, but yeah.
No, he's just such a loser. Like, looking back on my obsession, it's kind of like just so silly. It's just he wouldn't call.
Because this record's doing so well, do you have an investment, even at the age of 22, at continuing to do teenage music?
I think that with this record, I just want to make people happy. I realize that I'm getting a lot of slack because I'm a chick, and I brush my teeth with Jack, and that's so shocking. But
You mean Jack Daniels?
That would be the one.
Yeah.
That's my preference.
I just thought I'd ask. Okay. We're non-commercial here, but if I may, Crest might be more effective.
I don't think it's as antibacterial.
I'm not sure Jack cuts down on tartar, if you get my drift.
I don't know about that, but I think it is antibacterial, right?
I guess it is.
So there you go.
Right.
It's better than nothing.
Well, a lot of people listening to us now just might be on the verge of brushing their teeth, so,
Make the right choice.
Yeah, don't turn away from the medicine cabinet and go into the pantry. See if you can find them. I guess I have to say I'm kidding. In any event, let me just add that for the record. Talking about living like an animal, Let's listen to Backstabber, if we could.
Bored, stoned, sitting in your basement all alone, 'cause your little conversations got around. And look at what we all found out.
Look at what we found.
Look here, we all found out that you have got a set of loose lips, twisting stories all because you're jealous. Now I know exactly what you're all about.
What you're all about.
This is what you're all about.
This is an angry song.
Well, it's not angry. It's more about chicks need to watch each other's backs. I feel like I treat my friends with so much respect. And they're like family. And when I'm wronged by somebody that is like part of my family, it's rough. So I had to write a song about it.
I'm sick and tired of hearing all about my life from other people with all of your lies wrapped up so tight. So maybe you should shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth.
You never shut your mouth.
I'm told you had just about perfect SAT scores.
It was close, 1,500. I was like very studious. I was actually in the International Baccalaureate program in AP. I like loved physics and math, and I was in the marching band. And then after that practice, I would drive to Belmont. It's a college in Nashville. And just for fun, listen in on Cold War history classes, just because I just think it's so interesting. Yeah. And I was so curious kind of about all of that. I ended up taking my first solo trip to Cuba. So point being, I was very studious and really curious about a lot of things that are much deeper than, you know, partying and dancing.
You've described this album, I gather, as celebrating, I'm going to read this now, boys, boots, beer, boobs.
It is a celebration. I think the whole record's kind of a celebration of fun and youth and life. I wrote every song on the record, and I've also written for other people as well. And so I'm really proud of this record. I wrote maybe over 200 songs.
We're going to get some emails saying, I don't listen to NPR to hear that kind of music. I like you and I like your music.
Thanks. And I like that because you know what? I just stand for fun. It's pop music. It's not rocket science. It's not brain surgery. And I'm going to stand by the fact that I'm proud of this record. And I'm not a moron. So there.
I am in love with what we are, not what we should be.
Kesha, awfully nice talking to you.
Deal. Nice to talk to you too, man. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Kesha in New York, her debut album, Animal, out now and selling, well, like an animal.
Thanks.
So if it's just tonight, the animal inside, let it live and die. Like it's the end of time, like everything inside, let it live and die. This is our last chance.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News, directed by Sarah Beyer, Animal Kelly, and produced by Gemma Waters, Kimberly Adams, Thomas Pierce, Veronica Miller, Julia Holmes-Bailey, Theo Balcom, Sean Bowditch, and Habibin O'Sheen. Our technical director today is Burke Hun. Our librarian is Kim Oleski. Melissa Goh is our web producer. Our show was edited this week by Jeffrey Bennett. Our senior editor of Weekend Edition is Jenny Bergel. The senior producer of Weekend Edition is Devar Iran Ardalan. A couple more VIPs to credit. We have the managing editor of Digital News in the control room with us today, Mark Stenzel. Thanks for being here. The executive director of all news programming everywhere is Ellen McDonald. And the vice president of NPR News is Ellen Weiss. Final note, I'm going to go off for a little spinal surgery for a few weeks. Our friend and colleague, Audie Cornish, is going to be sitting in this chair. For the next few weeks, you'll enjoy getting to know her. Thanks very much. I'm Scott Simon.
So if it's just tonight, the animal inside, let it live and die. This is our
Patti Smith walked into our New York studios in a knit cap and scuff snow boots. She was by herself, an unusual New York rock and roll celebrity.
people say hello to me. I mean, sometimes the sanitation truck goes by and says, hey, Patty, or...
Really?
You know, that's when it's cool. You know, if the postman is saying hello to you, then I feel like, wow, that's something special.
No one recognized her when she first came to the city. 20 years old, an aspiring artist with a passion for French poets and American rock and roll. Patti Smith recounts those years in a new book called Just Kids, for those who know her music and those who don't.
Sometimes they seem to think, you know, I came out of the womb, you know, cursing with an electric guitar, you know. So I think it's important for people to realize that we were all young, all naive, and also we had lived in a time that had magic.
It's a very romantic book in some ways.
It was a romantic time.
I just don't know what to do tonight.
The time, the early 1970s, before Patti Smith recorded her first album, ushering in the era of punk rock. Before the great love of her life, Robert Mapplethorpe, made his mark as a photographer with sexually provocative images. They met on her first day in the city, and the book is the story of their romance and creative bond, young, struggling artists, sometimes so poor they slept on the street.
You know, I wasn't a stranger to hard times. I used to read the Bible. Well, I still do, but when I was young, I read the Bible quite a bit, and by Christ's example, he embraced poverty. So all of my role models, whether it was the disciples or John the Baptist or Arthur Rimbaud, all, you know, slept under the stars.
I think that it's a surprise to hear the godmother of punk say that she reads the Bible.
Well, I don't know why. The very first word on my very first record is Jesus. So obviously,
didn't die for my sin.
But I still invoke him as an entity to reckon with.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. Milton, pot of thieves, wild cord of my sleeve.
So much of what happens in your life is chance. You meet Robert Mapplethorpe, and you become a couple almost immediately. What was it that linked the two of you together?
We were really two of a kind. We were even physically, you know, we were both very lanky. We were both outsiders. We fulfilled a role for each other. As it says in the book, we woke up knowing that we were no longer alone.
You both wanted to be artists, and I have a sense, reading your book, that neither one of you knew exactly what art you were going to pursue. You write that you actually said to him, you ought to be a photographer.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I said, you should take your own photographs. I didn't mean for him to become a photographer.
He did.
Yes, he did. Once he started taking pictures, he just fell in love with photography.
This book is such a tribute to that relationship. And there's a moment when he is realizing that he is a gay man.
Well, really, when I met Robert, we were unformed. That's why I called the book Just Kids. I really want people to comprehend that we were young. It took a while to become who we evolved into. And I think for Robert, it was a struggle. At a certain point, it meant that he had to make a choice.
Did you feel left out by that when he made that choice?
I knew that I could never have a relationship with him. But of course, as time went by, I realized that what Robert and I had, no one else would have, male or female.
By the end of the book, you meet Robert again. He has AIDS at this time. You both know what is going to happen. Was it difficult to write about so much pain and loss?
Oh, it's very painful. I mean, I promised Robert the day before he died that I would write our story. And it took me 20 years, but I kept my promise.
Would you read the opening section of the book, which is the most heartrending?
All right, I'll try. I've never read it out loud, so I'll do my best. The phone rang, and I rose to answer. It was Robert's youngest brother, Edward. He told me that he had given Robert one last kiss for me, as he had promised. I stood motionless, frozen, then slowly, as in a dream, returned to my chair. At that moment, Tosca began the great aria, Vici d'Art. I have lived for love, I have lived for art. I closed my eyes and folded my hands. Providence determined how I would say goodbye.
Is there music that comes out of that loss?
Robert had very green eyes, and so I wrote this little song called, well, it's called Memorial Song, but it has the aspect of the emerald within it. Little emerald bird wants to fly away. If I cup my hand, could I make him stay? Little emerald soul, little emerald eye, little emerald bird, we must say goodbye.
It's beautiful. Thank you very much, Patti Smith.
Thanks.
Patti Smith's new book is called Just Kids. Read an excerpt and see photos of Smith and Robert Mapplethorpe at npr.org.
The story reported there by Deborah Amos. In with us all week, we hear Deborah from around the world. Deborah, it's been good to have you in the studio.
Thanks,
this week.
Thanks, it's been great to be here.
Once again, from NPR News, it's Morning Edition, edited by Greg Myrie and Martha Wexler. Our editorial staff includes Rena Advani, Chanita Anderson, Ann Hawk, Kitty Isley, Courtney Dorning, Jordana Hochman, and Maeve McGoran, with Shannon Rhodes and Nina Gregory at NPR West.
The executive producer of Morning Edition is Madalika Sika. Morning Edition's theme music was written by B.J. Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh.
I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Deborah Amos.